Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast. Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And today we are joined by Holly McNeish. Hello, Holly.
Hello.
Now, Holly, you are a poet primarily, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. But you're also a musician, a mother, and you've actually done albums and that. You've done books and albums and all sorts.
Yeah, but poetry albums. Oh. So the only instrument I can play is the recorder.
Do you do like a line of a poem and then a bit of recorder?
I might start. I played it till I was like 23.
Wow. Yeah. I thought it was illegal to play the recorder beyond the age of 11.
So did my dad.
It should be made illegal, to be honest. So did you...
I used to be able to play Silent Night by myself with two recorders through my nose. I did that for a talent show at school.
That's not a waste
of
life.
Oh my God. I don't want to brag, but my cousin Benjamin is a leading Australian alternative recorder player.
That's so specific.
It is. And he has a song called Voice of the Crocodile, and he plays it, and then he sometimes goes, whoa, 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 whoa. He likes wearing multicoloured trousers.
What a shocker.
Yeah.
I'm changing careers.
If he's the leading alternative recorder artist in Australia, who's the leading mainstream recorder artist in Australia? I'd like to meet that guy.
All right. Other cousin.
I think that would be more boring.
Yeah.
He might be all baroque.
Yeah, he probably just does like John Williams tunes and that tedious, tedious.
Right, yeah, it's all Lloyd Webber by a recorder.
Anyway, back to the guests. Don't
need to focus. Poetry and stuff.
Yeah, poems. What's that about? you have an amazing sling of accolades under your belt. You were the UK Slam Poetry Champion in 2009.
Yep.
Is it like in 8 Mile?
You imagine 8 Mile, that's me, that's it. That's what it's like.
But this is in the UK, so I imagine it's like 8 Mile, but after each like really serious like outburst, like because you're British, you apologise to the other contestant.
Is that terribly sorry. Your turn.
You go. After you.
It's not competitive, but my grandma thought that I was doing wrestling for a year. Like, never asked. Someone said I was a UK Slam champion. Everyone was telling her.
No, my grandma, she's 98, and I've been a video games journalist for 15 years, and she still thinks I write, like, the words on teletext. Like, I write CFAX. She hasn't even clocked that CFAX no longer exists. And I don't want to disabuse her of it. I'm just going to let her...
Just let her sail off
thinking that. That's fine.
My grandma, well, she was 97 until about 3 months ago, or she was 97 3 months ago, and she... said to me, like, nearly on her deathbed, I'd love you to wear more dresses, and I don't really understand what you do still.
Would you say I'm a man? Have you honoured that wish? Do you wear more dresses?
Do you know what? She gave me a bit of money in her will, and I'm not spending a lot of it on a dress, but I was in Topshop today. I tried on 30 dresses, and then...
bought some jogging bottoms.
Yeah, always what happens.
17 pairs of leggings later.
Yeah. So not only are you the UK Slam Poetry Champion, you've got your poems on YouTube, and some of them have been watched more than 3 million times.
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
Scary. I changed my surname after that happened. I didn't change my surname.
From McNeish to McMainstream. Look how... I'm Holly McPopular.
I'm Holly McThreeMillionViews.
I took my surname off everything.
Did
so
you?
I was so scared. I was like, I don't know what it's like. Like, my mum phoned me up. She's like, your dad says you've had 2 million views of that poem, Mathematics, but it's not one of your best, is it? I don't really understand.
Your family is very grounding, wow. Molly.
They are, but it's not. It's true. She was like, I think it's because, like, you're, like, female. It's called Mathematics. It's quite short. Maybe.
Oh, God.
Maybe that's why it is. Yeah, maybe.
Thanks so much.
But it's not. It's odd. It's odd thinking people have seen it so many times, but I do not think it's a sign of a good poem that's been viewed that many times. Like, if I'd have, I don't know, read the poem and then pooed in a bucket, it would have probably been viewed like 10 million times. I don't know. I don't, like, it's
really... Why haven't we thought of that, Helen? Really, oh. Right, at the end of this podcast...
Write that down.
Get the bucket.
That's right. Three girls, one bucket.
Scummy, it suits the name.
Yeah. Oh, we get a lot of misunderstandings.
Oh my God, you should see on our web stats that the
referrals.
Yeah, the referrals really? Are filthy, and you think the disappointment people get.
I feel sad for them.
Sorry.
Yes. But of course, alongside all these amazing accomplishments, Holly, you are a mum. So how old were you when you had your... You've got one daughter, is that right?
Yeah, one daughter. I was 26 when I got pregnant, 27, just 27 when I had her, basically. Yeah.
And that was not a planned thing, was it? Are we allowed to say that? You're not allowed to talk about it?
Yeah,
was
we
it a
are.
Surprise?
Allowed to say, it was a lovely surprise.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The storm visited you.
It was unplanned. Unplanned... child, yeah. I kept saying that to my grandma. It was a surprise, and she was like, "You mean unwanted? Not unwanted. Unplanned." I hate that idea that unless you've like planned for it for like 5 years, then it's somehow a bad thing.
Yeah.
Unplanned.
So nowadays, that is actually sort of relatively often quite young to have a baby, weirdly, almost.
Yeah,
I feel like it was quite normal like 20 years ago, and suddenly it's like people are like, 26, that's young.
Yeah,
and it
totally.
Would be like, my mother had seven by then in 1984. What are you talking about?
But it is. It's young where I live as well. Like, definitely one of the younger mums.
Was that difficult then, the fact that you were kind of the first person in your group of friends to have a baby?
Yeah, I had one other friend that had a kid, basically, and then I was like the second, but it was a friend that lived quite far away. So yeah, it was, but more because I hadn't seen it, so I didn't really know what to expect, and I didn't really have anyone to talk to about it or moan about it, or like, I'd never seen. I can't even remember seeing a pregnant person before I was pregnant. That sounds really stupid. I don't think I'd ever seen anyone breastfeed or. I'd never held a baby before 2 weeks before I had my own baby. Like, never. I'm the youngest cousin. Don't have any younger kids didn't have any younger kids in my family. So that, even that, I was like, what? How do you even do that? I was given a baby 2 weeks before.
You're like, I'm already getting one. You don't need to give me one.
Exactly. My partner passed me his little cousin. I was like, see you later. Learn.
Charming.
But yeah, I felt quite young, and I got shouted at a lot. Like, a lot of stuff in the book. I got this one guy, I remember when my daughter was about, she must have been about one and a half even, who lots of people telling me I was too young to have a kid. Oh, you can't possibly have a kid, you're too young. Like, thinking I was younger than I was. And which I guess some people take as a compliment, but it makes it pretty hard being a mum. Someone shouted teen mum at me, like, shouted it constantly over and over again. This, when I had my kid had a tantrum in like the city centre once. We had a really nice day listening to buskers, just sitting down, sunshine, beautiful sunny day, and then she suddenly just flipped.
They like to save it up, don't they, on
love
those days?
Yeah. Just for the public space. Yeah. When everyone walks past me on the main street, and then she just sat down, and was like, I hate you, I hate you. And this drunk guy across the street just started chanting, you're too young to be a mum. You're too young to be a mum. And everyone was staring. This is it. And this is what it's all about, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'm shouting at him. Whatever I was then, I'm 28. And I'm like, well, actually, I shouldn't have done that.
No, you should say, I'm 74.
You're right.
Also, you should wear more dresses.
I don't understand what you do.
Yeah.
Also, people don't know, do they? I thought, you know, piss off. I could be 15. If you think I'm 15, I could be 15. Don't shout at a 15-year-old mum. Like, that must be one of the hardest things to be at 15.
Mm. Or you could be a nanny or a sister or a cousin,
you
whatever.
You could be anything.
You know.
Yeah. But like,
you could have stolen the child.
Exactly.
They don't know, do they?
No. If you are a teen mum, don't know why she had a baby. You don't know what sort of mum she is. Like, piss off.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're listening.
Yeah.
But there is loads.
You. You Cambridge tramp. You obviously slam champion before
slampion, as I like to call it.
Before you had a baby and then you got pregnant, did you ever stop working through that time?
Well, probably when she gave birth, I'd imagine.
A little breather. No, bring me my pen. No, bring me my pen.
I'm having a contraction. No, wait, it's gone. I'm writing a limerick. No, it's back.
I wrote poems in the hospital about...
What, rhymes with perineum?
Did you?
Yeah, wow. I didn't write anything in labour, but I wrote something the night before, and then I wrote 12 thoughts after birth the day that I was from the hospital.
So what was the quality of the stuff you wrote like?
I don't know if it was any quality. It was like, I remember I wrote that, so I had Salt and Pepper's Push It on my birthing CD. Right. I was like, bad idea, don't put that on it. And then I just wrote like, I it was all stuff like, I don't think I'm crying because I love this child so much. I think I'm crying because no one's asking me to push a bowling ball through my arse anymore. Like, it was more things like that.
Yeah.
Like, or about, like, G phoned up all of the women in his entire family after seeing me give birth and was just, like, apologising.
Good.
And saying, thanks. And then being like, Gran, you had 7 kids. Oh, my God. Well done. Like, well done, Mum. Sorry, Mum. That was it. He was just, like, on this apologetic mission to every female that he'd ever met that has a child.
Well, he didn't ring me up, so. Yeah. Still working on that mission, aren't we?
So you literally have not stopped writing since you started. Yeah, when did you start being a poet?
I don't know. Like, I started working as a poet full time when my daughter was about 1.5 or 2.
Oh, so it wasn't your full time job before you had her?
No, I worked as an education officer for a planning urban design charity.
So did you feel like having a baby gave you a sort of new... Did it make you more motivated to pursue what you really wanted to do, or...?
I didn't really... To be honest, I didn't really want to do poetry. Like, I don't mean that in a bad way.
Fuck that shit.
Do you know, there's a job going in Catford, Iceland, if you're really sick of it. I noticed then.
I don't mean I don't love it now, but it was not my ambition. Like, I wanted to work in planning or in, like, economics or something to do with what I was studying. I didn't really think that would be a possibility, but then I kept just getting gigs and workshops, and then it started being like, oh, God, I've got this part-time job in poetry, I've got this part-time job basically as an admin assistant, which one is nicer, obviously, going to gigs and hearing bands and doing poems, and that's amazing. Yeah. So it was wicked. Like, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's the best job I could wish for, but it wasn't like a thought in my head that that's what I was going to become, a poet.
Mm.
Sounds even weird saying that now, to be honest.
Yeah, no,
it is a loaded thing, though. It's I'm a poet.
Yeah, no, like, so you sound like,
you're not wearing any corduroy or any purple crushed velvet. Exactly. Do you like dragons?
No, and I hate velvet. If I touch velvet, it makes me feel like I'm going to vomit.
Oh, so those poetry nights must be very difficult for you. Just don't touch the audience. Because I first saw you on the BBC talking to Lily Cole, of all people.
Oh, yeah.
The model from Cambridge.
We had to walk, like, pretend that we were saying hello to each other, like we just met as friends in the pub.
What do you mean television's not real, Holly? Shut your face.
Don't spoil it for her, Holly.
Shit.
She thinks that a camera follows her around all the time in case something interesting happens to her, and then it'll be a documentary on BBC Three. That's what she thinks.
That's how it happened.
It worked with that house thing, didn't it?
Isn't it? Dream, believe, achieve, Ellie.
So are you and Lily Cole actually friends? That's what we really want to know.
Best friends forever. She gave me this ring. Best friends. I mean, I haven't spoken to her since.
But only when the cameras were rolling and you didn't look her in the eye.
Yeah. She was really nice, and lots of people said we look like sisters, which was good because she's a supermodel.
Yeah.
That was good. That's what I got.
I didn't see this program, so if anyone did, what was the chat? What was the general vibe?
She was pregnant, basically, and she was asking me if I thought that she could carry on with all her creative activities and stuff.
Next question.
You're fucked, Lily. You're fucked.
Your life is over, my friend. What else would you like to know?
Buy a box of wine and some comfortable shoes.
Right. Yeah.
She's pretty minted, though, I would imagine.
It helps sometimes, so, doesn't it?
I would imagine that might help. Mm. Wealth and mother, I don't know.
Yes. Can't buy you ideas, Holly. Can't buy you ideas. No, but sorry. So what did you tell Lily Cole about that?
She was interviewing two different people, and then I was apparently the positive one whose creativity had come from having a child.
Right.
Which I don't think is true, to be honest, because I've been writing poems all my life.
Mm.
So it was sort of just the same. And I feel like the only reason I've written more poems since I've become a mum is because I don't sleep.
Mm.
I do think it's a practical thing. Like, as soon as I was pregnant, or very pregnant, I couldn't really sleep very well, so I was awake more. So I had more time when I was just sitting in my lounge wondering what happens now, basically, if that makes sense.
Mm.
I don't think it really was like this mental, having a baby, I've like changed as a person. Maybe I calmed down a bit, wasn't so angry at stuff. But actually, motherhood made me pretty angry at lots of things going on.
Yeah.
But I think it was just the time. Like, I spent a lot of time, like most people do, I guess, sitting in my front room with a baby sleeping, thinking, you're going to wake up in an hour. What the fuck is the point of me going to sleep? There's no point. So I'll just either watch a bit more of a film or I'll write some poems.
I was going to say, because most people just put on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Speak for myself.
Crack open another chocolate digestive and relax. That's your natural default, yeah, really.
That's how I relax.
Yeah.
It's not how I relax. I watch Wife Swap to relax, mainly.
Yeah. Helen does Wife Swap to relax.
It's very relaxing. Really? Yeah.
Have you done it?
No, only in my head. Only in my head. World, I like to swap my husband for a wife.
But I only started doing comedy after I had my first baby, and yeah, I don't feel that, and that's because that suddenly inspired me with loads of brilliant jokes. But what I did find that having a baby did for me was it kind of made me more fearless. It made me kind of think, it made me feel a bit more mortal as well, and have a sense of like,
yeah,
I've only got a finite time on this planet, and I want to try and do this thing and see if I can do it. Uh-huh. But also, if I fail at it, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I've done this thing that was really hard and amazing, and I'm doing it, and it's okay if that doesn't work out, because I will always care more about this. And this is kind of working out, so you know.
Actually, hearing you say that, I did have a lot of that. I remember after even like giving birth, I remember after giving birth being really annoyed that not everybody was like, that was amazing, well done, that's a really hard thing to do, because I thought it was a massive thing. I know everyone said it's natural, we've been doing it for years, it's still unbelievable. Like, I never expected anything like it. I thought my ribs were falling out.
Do you mean in terms of the pain specifically?
The pain, oh my god. Like, cool, we've been doing it since the beginning of the time. That's cool. I've never experienced anything so painful in all my life. Thought my ribs were going to explode. I get that some people have orgasms when they give birth. I did not. It was really, really horrendous. And afterwards, I remember there's a bit that I've written about in the diaries that it's like they came back with the form, and I had like no tears, just one stitch. It was really like a good birth. Which I get, but it still lasted for like a day and a half and still made me think I might die. And they ticked the form in the hospital form that said normal, uncomplicated. It's like, what?
There was nothing uncomplicated about it.
Are you joking?
That? Yeah.
Like, at least say, like, brilliant, Holly. That was absolutely.
Well, you wanted
brilliant.
Like an A star.
I just wanted someone to be like.
I just want to say that she went to Cambridge University. At this point.
But I mean, like.
She's a little needy.
Give it everything.
Holly McNeady.
That's it, Holly.
What do you mean? I was brilliant.
But I don't mean I was brilliant. I just mean, like, it's really fucking hard. Like, when I came out, I would see women on the street with children. I was like, you've done it. You've done it. I don't care what your birth was. I don't care what type of birth you have. You had a fucking vaginal birth, a cesarean. I do not give a shit. It's hard. Like, it's difficult. It's traumatic. Like, psychologically, physically. Like, people should be popping party poppers in your face every step you take out of that hospital.
Yeah.
No one did that.
That's where the NHS is failing. No. It should be like, honestly.
Yeah. It should be like at the end.
Jeremy Hunt, are you listening to this?
This is your biggest problem. It should be like the end of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. You walk across a race bridge and like all these fireworks go off, and there's Ant and Dec waiting to talk you through it and show you your best bits. That's what should happen after you give birth.
That's right. And shaking your umbilical cord. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, Fanny of one.
Now here's your champion, here's your placenta.
Here's your champion. In France, somebody said they give birth in France. Well, my friends gave birth in France. She's like, I get free physio for a whole year.
Yeah, afterwards. You do.
I thought you were going to say fizzy wine.
A glass of champagne.
Oh, that's
like,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Get given a glass of champagne. Where was it? I was in like in the hospital, but they said, do you want to go into the bath, the water?
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it's called. What the hell? And I was stupid. I didn't know anything about it. I thought it was like a shared one, like a big swimming pool. Like
one woman.
It's like a leisure centre.
It's all centre parts.
It's all I knew. And I was like, oh, I've got an individual one myself. So I sat in there and I remember vividly, obviously having no pants on, nothing on the bottom, but keeping on my really skanky, like, crop tops or sports bra thing, which is like off-white. Like, why am I wearing this? This is making me feel more weird. If I was just naked, I think I'd feel better. But like, wearing a top and no bottoms, that's the other way around. It's more normal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But just that way around, it was weird. And then they, like, I couldn't give birth. They took me out, put me in all these different positions. Like, hey, my boyfriend hold this, like, toilet seat thing and try and give birth. Like, it was just horrendous. Like, seven different birthing positions, couldn't do it. Put me in a wheelchair, took me down from the maternity ward to the normal hospital ward, I don't know. I just remember, like, sitting in this wheelchair, going from the lift, and, like, maternity ward with nice music, going down this lift, coming out, 7 o'clock in the morning, bright lights, everyone's running around, no one is giving a toss that I'm sat in a crop top with my fanny out, with a water bag hanging out. Just hanging out. Like, that's it. No more embarrassment ever again.
Yeah.
No. It's just like...
I did a lot of clubbing in the 90s. That's not the first time. That would have happened to me.
She's from South Ireland. I did. What you were saying about giving birth, I did think afterwards, like, I feel like I can do more now. I feel like I can do anything.
Mm.
And I did. I felt the main thing I thought was, like, I am not taking people's shit anymore. I remember going back to work after 6 months, and I worked with a lot of architects, and it was mainly men. A lot of men that had obviously not done any childcare at all, and were like bragging about how they'd done everything by themselves, they set up their practice by themselves. It's just like, I mean, you haven't given birth. I don't, like, no respect for you. You have no idea.
You've
like,
nothing,
I just this sort of raised respect for females or helpful men, and just like, if you're a man that's just not helpful, father, I don't care. I'm not making your tea anymore. I'm not making your coffee anymore. Yeah. You can bugger off. I've given birth. I'm going home.
Have you ever done the equivalent of coughing a horse out of your penis? No. Shut up.
Whatever you think you've done, you've built this building, great, but your wife gave birth to your 4 kids and looked after you at home.
Shove your Nespresso up your ass. No way. I do think, do we still feel guilty about wanting to pursue creative careers, because they're not the normal careers, so they're not 9 to 5, they don't fit in with nursery times,
and they feel like self-indulgent sometimes as well.
Yeah,
like when I was doing my normal office job, it seemed fine, like going to work and coming back, and I had set like feeding times between it, but going to a poetry gig, and they're not as well paid either. That was the thing. I remember like one gig I went to, and my partner had to come to the mall because I was breastfeeding, so I felt like that's my choice to breastfeed, and this is like infringing on everyone else's rights. They're like, why don't you just formula feed? Why don't you just feed formula feed, and then you can leave her at home? It was like so much pressure not to breastfeed for me. I know other people have different things and everyone has different stuff, but for me it was like that. And then my partner, bless him, like came to every gig, but sometimes I remember one, it was in Shoreditch, and we travelled, you know, like the hour and a half in the car. It was one of those times when the baby just cries and you're not sure why. I was like out of my seatbelt, going down the motorway, breastfeeding,
whilst
driving, you know, like nipple in the mouth, he's driving, baby's screaming. And then we got there and I went in to the bar that the gig was in. I was like, there's nothing set up in this bar. I know that I've done something wrong. And I went and asked the bartender, and it was the next day. I had got it the day before.
Jesus Christ.
And that was when I thought, like, literally, I've driven. Dad, 6-month-old baby to drive across London. Neither of them wanted to, and I've got the wrong day, and you're going to have to do it again tomorrow, and it's for £50. Like,
yeah.
This is ridiculous, because it's not like I was getting well paid at that time when I was doing it, and it did just feel like, okay, I won't do this. Which is why I started doing stuff on YouTube, actually, a lot of the time, because I thought, oh, I don't want to drag people across. And they did. It was basically...
Not 3 million of them, Jesus. So where do you get your best ideas? Because, I don't know, we find, Helen, don't we, that we mainly when we're drinking, let's be honest, when we're drinking.
Yeah. like the pub the other night, Ellie and I were talking about, I witnessed a man, a dad at my school, walking to work, and he was struggling because he was in tight, skinny jeans, and so were the rest of the family. And they were in, like, pointed boots and leather crop jackets. And they were moving so fast, but
where
so slowly.
Where did they go to
South London. South London.
Oh, my God. London is so jeans. Different. Everyone in mine is in, like, jeans or tracksuit.
Anyway, this is hipster dad and these hipster kids. So and they were late for school, but they just couldn't get their stuff And I said to Ellie, it was like watching the catwalk, and she's like, imagine if we did like the school run catwalk and we had all the different versions of
that would be amazing.
Of the mums going to...
That's similar for me. Like, I have never in my life sat down and said, write a poem now. I mean, probably 3 times I've had commissions when if I get a poem in my head, I write it down. Or if I get a poem in my head and I'm like, do the monkey bars, then I don't write it down, it gets lost forever.
Mm.
And those are the best ones. Those are the genius ones that would have, like, been amazing. And they've just gone. I don't know, for me, it comes from reading stuff, I think. I think that's a really boring answer.
What, like,
isn't
other
it?
People's parents? Because I did. When I read.
I read a lot of poetry. I don't read a lot of poetry.
No, when I,
oh, it's like, awful.
When I read your. I did think, I have heard this somewhere before recently, when I read your poem, The Lady of Shalott. I did think, this rings a bell for me. I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's familiar.
Yeah.
Was it inspired by someone else's work?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the other thing I was going to ask you was, so how do you cope with the tiredness? Because it is knackering. I mean, maybe you're going to describe it, but I find it so knackering being
so
a mum. And I find it really hard sometimes to be creative.
Yeah.
Or sometimes even just to do the work. Just to do the work of writing down an idea and fleshing it out and exploring it. When you're just knackered.
Yeah, knackered all the time. And that's... There's so many things like that, though, that make me so angry, because I feel like people act like that's just a personal, like, oh, it's motherhood. Not motherhood, it's politics. Like, they could sort that out if they gave, like, better maternity leave, better working at, like, all this stuff. It's so political. Like, I'm tired because I'm not really living in a culture that respects motherhood. That's why I'm tired. I'm not tired because I have a kid. I'm tired because nothing is set up to help me get some sleep and work and have a kid. That's what annoys me so much. And actually, I think that guys do have that. Like, no matter how equal your relationship and no matter how brilliant the dad is, you just, as a mum, I have never just walked into the bedroom and fallen asleep. You know, just like, just going to go for a bit of a lie down. Like, I would never say that. Even, I probably could have. I probably could have been like, I'm just going to go for a bit of a lie down. I would not have dared, because there's a baby there and I just need to check that everything's all right. You ask permission to do stuff. Ask permission to sleep. Ask permission to poo. ask permission to do everything that was just normal before, and you're not meant to complain about it as well, which is
but that's it. That's because there's that thing of motherhood.
Everyone goes through it, and so it's not just you.
We've been doing this from the beginning of time.
We've
been doing lots of things from the beginning of time, like murder.
That is a good defence. If I get done for murder, I'm like, well, you know, it's a perfectly natural thing.
That's right.
People have been doing this for thousands of years, since biblical times. Why are you complaining? So, is it time for our next section, Helen?
That's right. I think we've cracked the nut of creativity.
Yeah. That'll be the first time in 3 years.
That's right.
Thanks, Holly.
So we're going to do book chat.
Book chat.
Holly's written a book.
It's called Nobody Told Me. And when I told my mum that you were coming today, and the book's called Nobody Told Me, and she just went, oh, God, that's a brilliant title.
Oh, because nobody thinks it is, because you can't tell what it says. My dad was like, it looks like Nobody to Hold Me. And my brother was like, what does it say? Nobody told me, that's what it says.
Well, we've been called the Scrummy Mummies more times than I care to count, if it's any consolation. But yeah, it's about your... I can't bear to use the word journey, but I've done it. I'm doing it.
You sang it.
It's about your journey through motherhood and that.
Yeah, it's literally my diaries that I wrote with no intention of publishing them. From finding out I was pregnant, I did the pregnancy test at King's Cross toilets on the way to Glastonbury Festival.
Wow.
Yeah. I just needed to, like, be away from people, I think. And I had an hour to wait before the train. And I was like, right, come on, honey. Just admit that you're pregnant. Just go and do a pregnancy test. Like, I knew I was. It's not like it was a...
Was it the boobs?
Oh, what should I do? Should I go and get some chips? Or should I do a pregnancy test? like, an idea that I might be pregnant. Yeah, oh my God, the boobs. My mum's a nurse, and she was like, you're pregnant. Oh, I'm not pregnant. You are. Like, I'm not pregnant. Yes, you are. I've seen enough pregnant people.
Your mum's not a nurse. She's a witch.
But going to Glastonbury was brilliant. Like, apart from the vomiting and like running off the stage, finishing my set 5 minutes early because I needed to be sick.
Again, sounds like pretty standard Glastonbury to me.
That's it. Actually, being pregnant and watching people on hammocks or people like dancing around flowers or kids just looking quite calm all the time. Like, it's another side of Glastonbury that I didn't really know, but it was probably the best thing for me to see for 3 days, because I thought, oh God, I'm not ready to be another. I'm not this type of person that I imagine a mother would be. And then I saw these mums walking around with their kids in like healing fields, like, ooh, I don't know. Yeah, that's a really good description, wasn't it?
That's a universal noise for hippie,
different types of families,
unwashed, maybe has some dreadlocks,
like, yes. Like they were having fun, like, yeah. Okay, maybe I can do this, maybe it will right. So it was probably quite a good time to find out, I think.
Like, when did you have the kind of idea to do a book about, well, poetry and parenthood, as it says on the cover?
See, like, I didn't think I'm going to do poetry about parenthood. Like, I wrote loads of poetry about immigration when I was studying that, loads of poetry about food, loads of, like, I write lots of different stuff. But obviously, like, when you're pregnant and you have a baby, and if you've always written poetry about what your life, what's going on in your life, you're going to start writing poetry about that. It'd be weird if I was, you know, pregnant and only writing poetry about trees still, or I don't know, you know what I mean? But it was only because someone asked me to publish it, really. Like, the agent said to me, do you have any other poems? I was like, oh, I've got about 200 about being a mum. But in my head, it was still like, oh, yeah, it's not really something people want to talk about, people don't want to hear it. And it was my partner at the time that said about the poem Embarrassed that went viral on YouTube. I hadn't included it. I did a little CD with about 12 poems that I'd written, and I didn't include that one because I thought no one will relate to it. What's the point? Then he was like, I think people will. And I put it up, and that's one of the ones that went viral without having to poo in a bucket to make it go viral, which is always a positive story.
It was about tits, though.
No. Oh, yeah, it was. Of course it is. Breastfeeding. What am I on about?
It wasn't about tits.
I breastfed from my head. Spiritually from
real
their
mothers
mind.
Breastfeed from their eyes. I bleed milk for my tears. I cry milk. I think the breastfeeding poem is my favourite. Would you do a bit?
Yeah, do you want me to do
I'm
that?
I'm so excited. We have never had live poetry.
I know.
On the podcast
not.
Before. No.
No. Pemis won't answer our calls. I don't understand why.
So, do you know what? That's been one of my main insults that people put, you're not Pemis, are you? You know Pemis. I was like, I know I'm not Pemis. I'm not stupid.
Oh, I'm also
great.
Not Eddie Murphy. What's your point?
All right, so this is from the 13th of September, when my daughter was 6 months old, and I wrote it at 2:56 p.m., which is not important, but I always time the poems. All right, I'll do a little bit of the prose and then the poem.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Yeah? All right, I will not do this ever again. I was, just to say, I was sitting on a toilet seat when I wrote the whole thing. I was sitting on a toilet seat for an hour and a half, because my daughter, I fed her, she fell asleep for an hour and a half, and I didn't want to move because I was so tired. And I'd just been in a cafe, could have ordered a cup of tea, but instead I'd gone to the toilet because I was embarrassed to breastfeed. So I sat on the toilet for an hour and a half in public toilets. I will not do this ever again. Not one more dirty toilet feed. Breathe in. Dee was right. Don't worry about it. You're feeding our baby, Holly. That's all you're doing. I'm so tired of this. All it boils down to is that people here feel uncomfortable seeing the sucking, because we've been trained that sucking a nipple is a sexual thing, which it can be for sure. But our bodies have so many uses. Every inch of our bodies can be sexual and not. I put a tampon in the same place I have smear tests and sometimes have drawn a hard penis into. I do not confuse the three. They don't feel the same. I do not think I'm shagging the tampon or that my boyfriend is doing a swab on me. I use my tongue to kiss and to eat. I don't worry that I'm snogging my dinner. I kiss my daughter and my mum and my partner. Those lip-to-skin touches do not all have the same effect on me. They don't feel the same just because it's the same body part or action. Just as a man flicking his tongue sexily across my nipple and sucking a bit while we both gyrate naked on each other does not have the same effect on me as a baby strapping its lips around my nipple and sucking milk out like its life depends on it while I'm sat in my jeans on the couch. Both can feel nice. Both sometimes don't feel nice. Embarrassed. I thought it was okay. I could understand the reasons. They said there might be young children or a nervous man seeing this small piece of flesh that they weren't quite expecting. So I whispered and tiptoed with nervous discretion. But after 6 months of her life spent sitting on lids, as she sips on her milk, nostrils sniffing on shit, banging her head on toilet roll dispensers, I wonder whether these public loo feeds offend her. Because I'm getting tired of discretion and being polite. As my baby's first sips are drowned drenched in shite, I spent the first feeding months of her beautiful life feeling nervous and awkward and wanting everything right. Surrounded by family till I stepped out the house. It took me 8 weeks to get the confidence to go into town. Now the comments around me cut like a knife as I rush into toilet cubicles feeling nothing like nice. Because I'm giving her milk that's not in a bottle. Wishing the cocaine generation white powder would topple us-y pyramid sales pictures across our green globe and female breasts banned. Unless they're out just for show. And the more I go out, the more I can't stand it. I walk into town, feel I'm surrounded by bandits, because in this country of billboards covered in tits and family newsagent magazines full of it. W.H. Smith top shelves out for men, why don't you complain about them then? In this country of billboards covered in tits and family newsagent magazines full of it, W.H. Smith top shelves out for men, I'm getting embarrassed in case a small flash of flesh might offend. And I'm not trying to parade this. I don't want to make a show. But when I'm told I'd be better just staying at home. And when another friend I know is thrown off a bus and another mother told to get out of the pub, even my grandma said maybe I was sexing it up. And I'm sure the milkmakers love all this fuss. All the cussing and worry and looks of disgust as another mother turns from nipples to powder, ashamed or embarrassed by comments around her, and as I hold her head up and pull my cardi across and she sips on the liquor made by everyone's God, I think for God's sake Jesus drank it. So did Siddhartha, Muhammad and Moses and both of their fathers, Ganesh and Shiva and Brigid and Buddha, and I'm sure they weren't doing it sniffing on piss as their mothers sat embarrassed on cold toilet lids in a country of billboards covered in tits. In a country of low-cut tops, cleavage and skin, in a country of cloth bags and recycling bins, and as I desperately try to take all of this in, I hold her head up. I can't get my head round. The anger towards us and not to the sounds of lorries offloading formula milk into countries where water runs dripping in filth. In towns where breasts are oases of life, now dried up in two-for-one offers enticed by labels and logos and gold standard rights claiming breast milk is healthier powdered and white. Packaged and branded and sold at a price so that nothing is free in this money-fueled life, which is fine if you need it or prefer to use bottles, where water is clean and bacteria boiled. But in towns where they drown in pollution and sewage, bottled kids die and they knew that they'd do it. In towns where pennies are savoured like sweets, we're now paying for one thing that has always been free. In towns empty of hospital beds, babies die diarrhea-fueled that breast milk would end, so no more will I sit on these cold toilet lids, no matter how embarrassed I feel as she sips. Because in this country of billboards, covered in tits, I think I should try to get used to this. That is the first time I've ever read out a poem having had any alcohol before.
Wow, wow. You did amazing.
I didn't. I'm slurring my
throat. No, you were not. Ellie and I cried. God. I'm crying milk.
To hear you do it live in my actual lounge. I am genuinely touched and honoured.
Yes, so thank you so much.
And a bit leaky.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by what a big impact that poem had?
Yeah, really surprised. But I was only surprised for the reasons that I'm quite glad I did it, because I did not think anyone else was doing that. Like, I didn't speak to anyone else about it, didn't talk to anyone about it. And then when I put it online, everyone's like, I've done that. Sitting in toilet seats all the time, I'm always going to the toilet. It's quite bad that so many people relate to it, I think. The more I think about it, and I didn't think this at the time of writing it at all, but it's just the more motherhood things I'm involved in, the more conferences I go to because of writing the poem, and they asked me to go and read it. Women's boobs, the nipples, they're no different from men's bodies. There's no real reason why we shouldn't be topless as much as men are. I really do think that now. What is this weird culture that we've got that is...
Well, that's why we invited you to do this podcast topless, we always do, because we wanted you to be comfortable.
Exactly, that's it. And it annoys me that, of all that... I've been to, loads of conferences now, UNICEF conference, EU conferences, all about, women's maternal health, infant feeding, all about breastfeeding, and they all talk about the health benefits and people that can't breastfeed and problems with breastfeeding, and no one talks about psychological stuff. The idea of literally going round your partner's family's house and whacking out your boob in front of your father-in-law. That's for people that I know, and for me personally, that was the bigger deal. I could breastfeed fine. The physical stuff was all right. Most people I know, the physical stuff was all right. I know some people have massive problems with it. But it was the psychological stuff. You're not welcome anywhere apart from pretty much on the couch in your living room. You're really not. Stickers on cafes saying we welcome breastfeeding here, cool. If we need that, that means you're not welcome anywhere else. That's what it says to me. You're welcome here, but not there. And it's hard. Got one gig that I went to, I have quite a lot of midwives come to my gigs, which is really nice, actually. But one gig, this woman said that... somebody said, could you not do that here? And she said, okay, no problem. And literally just took the baby off her boob because she knew it was so full that it would squirt.
Amazing.
So she took the baby off the boob and just sat while her nipple squirted milk across the cafe continuously and was like, okay, is that better? I had a gig in Leeds last year. It was the only date on the tour, which for some reason I didn't do the embarrassed poem. I think I'd, in this group of midwives, had come... basically to hear that poem, which I don't really know about stuff like that. I would never have thought someone to come for a specific poem or whatever. But after the gig, I was selling books, and they literally circled around me, 20 midwives circled around me, and they were like, read the poem.
Wow. like a wicker man.
Literally, they were chanting, so funny. Chanting. They were so funny, we've come from the Leeds, midwifery school, read the poems.
I do love the fact that you have written quite a few poems about your boobs. And your Abbey Road Studios intro, you say, I went from A cup to E cup to C cup to D cup. You've gone up and down the scale. It is a weird thing.
Yeah, and no one seems to acknowledge that that might be hard to deal with. All the stuff that goes with it. If men had suddenly their penis suddenly inflated to the size of a...
I'm trying to think. Let me think about my husband's penis. A banana, something like that. Something really massive, right? Yeah.
Like a Frankfurter. Yeah. One of those big...
A cocktail sausage.
Big... Not your regular Greg sausage roll, not your extra.
Oh, gosh. Don't be ridiculous, Helen.
Their penis inflated, then you, like, whacked it with a hammer for, like, however long, and then it bled, and then you were like, that's disgusting. But what you need to do is to try and get back into shape so your penis looks like it's not been bashed by a hammer, it's not been bleeding for 3 weeks, and then you'll be accepted by society again. They'd be like, this is shite.
Yeah.
This is shit. Shave it, God. Bash it, bleed it.
It's and like, then be bikini like, ready.
And be bikini ready.
It's like you've bugged my house. The conversations we have. She's so in touch with real life, isn't
she? I know,
she?
I know.
So observational.
Again, can you tell a shit poem from a good one? Like, how do you...
No, you know? I can't. I've never done, like, literature. I've not done any creative writing courses, poetry workshops, nothing. So I've never been able to, like, get better. I feel like if I read the stuff that I wrote when I was 15, it's not far off what I'm writing now. It's different topics, but it's not any different style. I've not improved. I've not improved for 20 years. That's what I want to tell everyone listening. My style of poetry.
The book is okay.
It's the same. But yeah, so but it's your, like your the first time. So I don't
your
know,
latest
but...
poem, Bob the Builder, can fix it. For me, finishing with that, yes he can, echoing obviously the Obama generation.
I don't want to diss Bob the Builder, like, I love it. And the sort of sexual tension between Wendy and Bob is one of my main thrills in life.
Helen Thorne, I think it's time for one of your games.
Yes, it is, Ellie, it is. So I thought it would be really good that if Ellie and I had a little poem off.
So yeah, do you want to go first?
I've got a haiku called... Grandma's advice. Smile, nod, tolerate. Oh, for fuck's sake, it's my kid! Breathe, smile, tolerate. Grandma's advice.
That was a bit too many syllables in the last bit, wasn't it?
Breathe, smile, tolerate?
Yeah, because in Japanese, a haiku is done in, like, the
Isn't
Japanese
it 575?
Yeah, but if you...
You have been on Wikipedia.
That's, like, the way that they translate it, but actually if you study the actual Japanese form of haiku... I'm joking, I don't know anything about haiku. But I was sounding like I did.
All right,
ready? You go.
Here we go, are we ready? Every day I wake at dawn when kids jump on my head. It takes me all damn morning just to get them dressed and fed. Every day I wonder, why did I decide to breed? By 5 p.m, I'm mad and I'm sad, and I know just what I need. I need a vino! I'm crying out for a vino almost every night. It's got to be soon, and it's got to be strong, and it's got to be served in a pie. Served in a pie.
Oh, my days. Oh.
Now, regular listeners will know that I've cheated a bit. that is a song that that is a version of a song that Helen and I wrote together, and we have performed on the podcast before. Whoa. We wrote it for Helen McGinn, the wine expert, and we
it's not original.
It, so.
That would. But I was a little moved.
Should we do the second verse?
Sometimes when the kids are out, I dream I'll change the locks, lie down on the kitchen floor, and drink wine from a box.
I don't need no handbook on how to be a mum. I just need a glass of wine. Or maybe a magnum.
Oh, my God.
I need a vino!
In conclusion, Holly, who is the winner?
Well, as much as I like the first haiku, which was brilliant, from Helen, I think the winner is your poem, but that means that you're both the winner because... You were both involved in
the winner is comedy. There yes. we are. The winner is comedy.
Well, we're nearly at the end, but of course we can't finish a podcast without the scummy mummy confessions, can we, Ellie?
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
So, Helen, do you want to kick us off?
I do. So, I was in Australia recently, and I went to get my legs waxed because I've been living in England for the last 10 years. And my husband jokingly said, "I wonder if she'll charge you extra for your." Legs.
Wow.
Because he's a feminist.
He has his legs waxed all the time.
Oh, that's right. So I went in my culottes. To Martine. And anyway, I said, "Oh," and I said the line, I said, "Oh, my husband joked that you'll have to charge me extra for my hairy legs." And she said, "Oh, no, I've seen it all." And then I take my trousers off and she went, "Jesus, you're hairy."
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so, and of course, We talked about husbands because it was 1965 in Australia. And I said, oh, look, I'm not really bothered. And she said, oh, well, if your husband doesn't mind, I guess it's fine. I said, but the clincher was that she then went on to tell me that she was a Reiki healer and that she's also a Ghostbuster.
Are you sure she didn't say racist healer? This is Australia.
I did find that in Australia.
Yeah, no, just a touch of the racism. But she was telling me that, she'd been doing some spirit healing in houses. Mm. And unfortunately, one of the spirits had attached itself to her and that she was going on a date that night and she had to cancel the date because she had a spirit attached to her. And I said, no, that won't do. You've made the right choice. and then she waxed my bikini line. So anyway, That's Australia.
I've only had a bikini wax once and I put those paper pants because apparently my pants were too big. I didn't realise. I took my trousers off and she was like, you just wear your pants. She was like, oh, they're quite big. I was like, really? Are they quite big? I think they're quite
big. They're a Marks and Sparks brief.
Yeah, that's it. But apparently not normal. And then she gave me a pair of paper pants and then I put them on and then I went back into the room. She was like, oh, they were on the wrong way around. I am never... ever doing this again.
So my confession is today I took my little one Joe out for a walk and you know I just grabbed like a pack of those crisps that are supposed to be all right because they're organic and they're called corn snacks and we all know they're crisps. So they've been rummaging around in the changing bag for the whole weekend, but I didn't really think about it. Got to the doctor's and just went to make this appointment, like, and then as I turned to go, over the course of the weekend, the crisps had been crushed in the bag to a fine powder, which my son had tipped all over his face and the whole of the buggy, covering himself in a fine orange dust. So that he looked like he had, like, the opposite of scurvy, whatever that is. I don't know what it is. But, you know, he'd been feeding him pure vitamin C for months and months. And that he had the pox because it was all sort of crispy. So, yes, crisp attack. Baby.
Live in a flat with one toilet and my child had diarrhea and she was in the toilet and I really needed the toilet. And sometimes that happens quite a lot. And I have driven to the local Tesco's and gone to the toilet. I've gone into our garage a lot with a plastic Tupperware box and gone to the toilet.
Put that, like, on YouTube, you'll make a million.
One time, the lowest point, my partner was in the toilet and I was like, I needed a poo, and I thought, I don't think I can make it to the garage, and I took a nappy, and I did a small poo in one of my daughter's nappies, and why am I saying this? Actually, do you know what? I'm not embarrassed about it, because it was a terrible moment. Did a poo in her nappy, wrapped it up, he came out of the toilet, what's going on? I was like, she's just done a poo. Didn't say it loud enough for her to hear because I knew if she'd heard, she'd be like,
no, what I know, mummy.
And then everyone would know that what I'd done was stand in my daughter's bedroom with the door closed, my hand to the door, because I thought, I don't know what to do with this situation. I'm literally doing a poo into a nappy in a child's bedroom. This is the lowest point of my life ever.
You've had a great life.
That sounds dreamy.
I never thought I'd be in this situation. This is not what I imagined. This is not what the magazine said.
No.
Not what the magazine...
You weren't skipping down a beach or...
I didn't think I'd poo in a nappy.
But you get a million points for versatile use of nappies.
She upcycled, Ellie.
Yeah, exactly. You upcycled.
In your face, Kirsty Allsop.
I think that was a great Scummy Mummy confession, don't you?
Excellent Scummy Mummy confession. And what a way to end the podcast.
A poo in a nappy.
There we go. With the UK's leading poet, Holly Mitch.
She pooed in a nappy.
She shits in her own daughter's bedroom.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. As always, we're on the Facebook, we're on Twitter @ Scummy Mummies. You do the Instagram.
The Instagram, that's right. Look at me. And we're going to be at Camp Bestival again, which is where we saw you last year.
And I'll be there again this year.
Yes, now where do we get your fabulous book?
Nobody told me.
You can get my book from any small independent retailer.
Is it not
or
on Amazon?
Or Waterstones or Amazon.
Pay your taxes. We say it every time.
Every time.
It's a new catchphrase.
But don't get rid of Prime.
Holly, you've been a brilliant guest. Thank you so much for coming along. Have you enjoyed yourself?
I don't know how I'm going to get home, but...
Until next time.
Bye-bye! You're going to read from your actual book.
I am.
And what page is it?
This is page 152.
152?
Why is that a
matter? It's an actual book. When they buy, when all our listeners buy a book, they'll go, I'm going straight to that page. It's my favourite bit.
Ah, I get excited about page numbers, actually.
So do I. I like to paginate.
Yeah, and I time all my poems and stuff like that.
I suffer from vaginal dryness. Sorry.
I've had recurrent thrush.
Have you got a poem about itchiness?
Do you know what? Next collection. I've actually got a poem about thrush and cystitis in it.
Oh.
Interesting, huh?
And that so book is called...
I don't know what it's called yet.
It said, you said too much.
The yoghurt year.
I've never done that. I just don't believe it would happen.
100% cotton gusset.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got that. I haven't done anything.
Nah. Cranberry juice douche.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.